You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Dr. Joanne Liu, International President of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of the world's most interesting organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Harley Finkelstein, the president of Shopify, the world's leading e-commerce platform, small and medium-sized business. Harley, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here, Carl. Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what was your family up to back in the day?
I was born in Montreal. Grew up until I was about 12 years old in the West Island of Montreal. Mom and dad were, dad, first of all, was an immigrant to Canada. He immigrated with his parents and siblings in 1956 during the Hungarian Revolution. My grandparents, my father's parents were Holocaust survivors. And so when they came to Canada in 56, he had no money, didn't speak the language, had no education. So my grandfather ended up taking out, getting a little stall at the Jean Talon farmer's market called La Capitaine and sold eggs at the farmer's market in Jean Talon, pretty much until he died a couple of years ago. And actually the egg stall is still there if you ever go by the Jean Talon farmer's market. And my mother's family, my grandfather was a peddler. He would basically go to all the factories in Montreal, buy up wholesale products, and then head out to Valleyfield every day, 6 days a week, to sell vacuum cleaners and pajamas and what have you out of his trunk. And so no one called themselves entrepreneurs. None of them said they were entrepreneurial even. They were just using small business and entrepreneurship to survive. And when I was about 13 years old, my mom and dad moved myself and my sisters to South Florida, to Boca Raton. And I went to high school there. And that really is when I started my first company. I started a little DJ business when I arrived in South Florida, and ended up coming back to Montreal in 2001 to go to McGill when I was 17.
Harley, as I recall, you started a business when you were at McGill.
Yeah, I did.
What was it, and did it compare to the DJ business?
The DJ business that I started when I was in high school was sort of it wasn't a joke, but I was 13 years old. I'm Jewish, and so a lot of 13-year-old Jewish kids go to bar mitzvahs. And I thought every time I'd go to these bar mitzvahs, I would see these DJs. They just seem like the coolest people on the planet to me. But nobody would hire me as a DJ when I was 13 years old because, well, frankly, I didn't know how to DJ. And so I started my own DJ company and hired myself and ended up DJing like, I don't know, a couple hundred parties. But when I got to McGill in 2001, September 11th, it just happened. My dad got into some serious financial trouble. I was no longer around. And I was forced to support myself and support my mom and much younger sisters. And so a friend of mine was on student council at McGill University. It was called SSMU at the time. I don't know if it still is. And SSMU, and convinced me that, or told me that McGill spends quite a bit of money on promotional products every single year, and that I should try my hand at becoming a t-shirt supplier for McGill. And so without knowing very much, I bought a screen printing machine, taught myself how to screen print, and started selling t-shirts to McGill and then subsequently to dozens of universities across Canada.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. This is a professor kind of question. Harley, you went to McGill, then Concordia, then U of O, MBA, law, business. Were they different kinds of institutions, or is it mainly the same experience?
Very different. So I took a different approach generally to school, I think, than most did. I looked at it far more transactional than I think a lot of students do. I started at McGill because, McGill is McGill. It's one of the greatest schools in the world, and I have a lot of pride that I went there. But I actually had to leave McGill halfway through my undergrad because this t-shirt business that I had grown meaningfully, and it really required me to spend a lot of time in the office, which was in the Montreal Garment District, the sort of Chabanel area of Montreal. I had a small office there. And in truth, I found there was more flexibility at Concordia in terms of my course load than I did at McGill. And McGill was actually very self-aware about that. They had recommended that I take a reduced course load. They recommended that I sort of create a schedule that would allow me to be a full-time entrepreneur, but also be a student. And I found Concordia, I was able to take night classes and online classes and weekend classes. It was more flexible for me. But by the time I finished undergrad, a mentor of mine convinced me to consider law school. And this particular mentor did not want me to go to law school to become a lawyer. This mentor who happened to be teaching law at the University of Ottawa had convinced me to go to law school to become a better entrepreneur. His name is Philip Reimer, and his view was that law school could be like finishing school for entrepreneurs. And so to me, there was a transaction. I was giving this university, whether it was McGill or Concordia or University of Ottawa, I was giving the law school, I think tuition was $15,000. And I was going to require that in return, in compensation for that, that University of Ottawa's law school gave me $15,000 or more of value. Mm. And I think by using that approach that the university owes me a debt because I've given them money and sort of looking it through this sort of transactional lens, it made it so that I didn't really care about what my grades were. I was selfish around learning. I was selfish around growth, not necessarily trying to get the grade on the exam. And I think that a lot of students, they sort of look at their academic experience, whether it's undergrad or graduate school, as being, I just want to get the best grades because I want to use it as a stepping stone to my next thing. Whereas there wasn't a next thing for me. I was already an entrepreneur. I looked at law school as selfishly wanting to know how to be a better writer, how to be more articulate, how to be able to, do critical reasoning, how to read 4,000 pages and pick out the two or three lines that matter most. And actually more and more, as I advise and mentor, other students and other entrepreneurs who are, in their early 20s or late teens, I often will say, what do you want to get out of university? And if the answer is I want a degree, they're probably not doing it for the same reasons I did it. I went to school to become better at my craft, full stop.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. I want to play that clip for my students. I think it'll be great for young people to hear. So you were a lawyer for about a year, I guess. You're a lawyer, you're just starting out, then you sit down with the CEO of Shopify. Tell us about that in your journey to chief platform officer.
Yeah. So in undergrad, as I said, I had this t-shirt business, and it was a good business, but it was a wholesale business model. It required that I fly to different universities from, Dalhousie to UBC, meet with student council and make the pitch and meet their procurement team to do their t-shirts, their Frosh t-shirts or their 101 week t-shirts or their promotional products in their bookstore. And it was a very sort of in-person type of business model. And I was able to pull that off in undergrad. In law school, it required that I was in class a lot more. I don't know every law school, but certainly at University of Ottawa Law, they use the Socratic method of teaching, but they also ensured that, they would randomly call out students' names and say, hey, Mr. Finkelstein, can you please explain this particular case? And so you actually had to attend. So the business that I had in undergrad was not scaling well in sort of the graduate school environment. I needed something more virtual. When I moved to Ottawa in 2005 to go to law school, I didn't have any friends or family here, but I began to ask around, hey, where do the entrepreneurs hang out? Because frankly, entrepreneurs, by that point, I was 21 years old. The entrepreneurship community was my tribe. They were my friends. That's who I felt most comfortable with. It didn't even matter what business those entrepreneurs were leading. I felt very at home with other entrepreneurs. So I'd asked where the entrepreneurs were spending time. And I was directed to a coffee shop here in Ottawa in the Glebe called Bridgehead. And I started going to this coffee shop every Friday night, meeting other entrepreneurs. And one of those entrepreneurs was Toby Lutke, who is the CEO and founder of Shopify. And I told him, hey, he was just transitioning. He initially was selling snowboards and then wrote this piece of software famously for the snowboard shop and then realized the snowboard business was a good idea, but the software business was really where the business, where it had real growth potential. And so he stopped selling snowboards and focused on the software side of things to help anyone build an online store. And I became an early customer of Shopify's. I moved my wholesale business in college to more of a B2C retail business online. It was called Smoofer. And I spent, spent law school and business school selling t-shirts on the side, graduated in 2008, moved out to Toronto to do my articles for 10 months, hated law. I thought that law was the antithesis of entrepreneurship, whereas entrepreneurship felt like a real meritocracy. The law environment, particularly this firm, who I won't mention the firm name because I don't want to say anything bad about them, but I would say that it was all about legacy. It really mattered. If you were a second year student or a second year lawyer, you were being allocated work that was appropriate for a second year lawyer. If you were an articling student like me, you were not required to go and bring business into the law firm because that wasn't your role, even though I thought I would be able to do so very effectively. And so I became incredibly disenfranchised with the law firm environment, and more importantly, with the legal profession. It wasn't for me. Every time I was in a meeting, I felt like I was on the wrong side of the table. I was more interested in learning about the business and the entrepreneur on the other side than I was with sort of, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's on the legal side of things, even in terms of, you know, big M&A and big due diligence files. It was boring to me. So halfway through my articles in 2009, I called Toby and I said, hey, you know, I've been a merchant now for a couple of years. The experience that I've had as a Shopify merchant building an amazing company that effectively at the time was competing with the likes of Walmart, that was so cool. I would love to help other people have that same experience. And in the same way that entrepreneurship was this incredibly effective tool for me to make money or to become a DJ or to do anything, I want to give more people those same tools. And later that year, my girlfriend and I at the time, who's now my wife, we moved from Toronto to Ottawa. And my first job at Shopify was effectively the Swiss Army knife, the jack of all trades. You had these three or four incredibly brilliant software engineers, and my job was to do everything else. We didn't have a CFO or a chief marketing officer. We had no sales, or, you know, we didn't have very much then. So my job was to take this incredible product that these brilliant software engineers and programmers built and commercialize it, find ways to get into the hands of people that may want it. And that was about 13 years ago.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about Shopify, where it is and where it's going.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening the CEO Series. Today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. Harley, give us a snapshot of Shopify right now. Then we'll talk about COVID-19, what happened during the crisis. But today, how big is it and how did you benchmark your size?
Yeah. So a couple of different ways to sort of think about that. We have now millions of merchants that use our platform. Well over 2 million merchants use Shopify. And on their online side, we also obviously have an offline product where, you know, physical stores all over the world use Shopify to power their in-store retail as well. We're about 10% of all e-commerce in the US right now. And there's about every 30 seconds or so, a brand new entrepreneur gets their very first sale on Shopify. From a company perspective, we're over 10,000 people that work at Shopify. And we have merchants in more than 175 countries. So big impact. The neat part about about Shopify is that we really are powering consumers' favorite brands, but we're sort of the brand behind the brand. We're not really that visible. I mean, we've become more visible because of things like Shop Pay, which is our consumer product, so that a lot of consumers listening will have encountered Shop Pay as they're, you know, perusing their favorite online stores. But more and more, I think the relationship that we have with our merchants is that of a retail operating system for them. And what I mean by that is, as I mentioned, we have millions of stores that use Shopify, but if you were to pretend for just one second that Shopify was a single retailer, if you were to aggregate all our stores and pretend that we were one entity, we would be the second largest online retailer in America. Amazon would be the first, Shopify would be second. The reason that's important is because what that allows us to do is we can now go to payment companies and shipping companies and fulfillment companies and capital companies and all these different products and services that small businesses need. And we can negotiate on their behalf as if we're the second largest online retailer in America, except we can give them those economies of scale. And the ultimate, the end result of that is a true leveling of the playing field. So today, when you sign up for Shopify, the pricing you're getting on ability to process credit cards, or your shipping rates on shipping labels, or your ability to get cash advances or loans, even though you may be at your mom's kitchen table just getting set up, you are now able to leverage these massive economies of scale because of the Shopify ecosystem. And that, I think, is one of the things I'm most proud of.
Are the 10,000 employees in Canada, how many are in Ottawa?
Around the world, I would say that the largest sort of clustering is probably in Canada. Ottawa, Toronto, kind of GTA area being sort of the larger ones. But, you know, post-pandemic, Shopify is a work from anywhere company. We call it digital by design. So there is no office centricity. We still have locations where people go in for onboarding and for team on-sites or off-sites. But generally, we are all working from wherever we want. I myself am working right now from my house in Ottawa, but we are fully remote now.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. How often do you personally go to the office?
I see my team, I see my colleagues probably a couple times a month, maybe two or three, 4 days a month. Now that may be I was in New York last week. So that may be at our New York port, which is sort of our New York space. That may be at, we have an actual, what's called Shopify Spaces in LA, where any entrepreneur can kind of drop in at any time and just kind of have a space to work from. That may be one of our offices somewhere around the world, but there is no sort of HQ of Shopify anymore. But we do believe in person and seeing your team face-to-face is really important. So we've created this concept called bursting, which is it's a couple of times a year, people spend intensive times with their colleagues and the people they work with. And we think that is a better model than sort of this hybrid model, which is work from anywhere, but you can also go to an office. But when you're in the office, your colleagues may not be there that day. We're trying to be a little more thoughtful about it and not necessarily, I think the hybrid model often comes off as indecision. We're trying to actually be more decisive to say work from anywhere, but a couple of times a quarter, make sure you and your team are getting together. And here are some options of where you can get together.
Well, part of the fun is that you live in Ottawa, but you get to travel to LA, to Toronto, other places for a few days.
Or Berlin, or, you know, Australia, or, you know, we have offices all over the world. Absolutely. But the other part about it is, you know, one of the downsides to building a large public company from Canada is that historically, if you want to come join our leadership team, you effectively would have to move to Ottawa. And since removing that requirement, our new GC, Jess Hertz, who's incredible. She came out of the White House. She's in DC. Our new chief technology officer, who came out of Slack, is in San Francisco. Our CFO is based in New York City. This idea of being geographically agnostic to where people live has meant that Shopify's talent pool and our ability to recruit is so much easier and so much higher now. That's been really valuable to us.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. I may be old school. I worked for IBM, McGill & Oxford for many years in relatively corporate environments. When do you want to be in the room with other people? What are the tasks you want to be with them about? Or is it just getting to know each other?
I mean, some of it is just making sure that, you know, having a good relationship with your team is going to pay dividends no matter what. But there are certain things, you know, when we do our annual planning, so, you know, the year 2023, we'll do our planning in August, for example. That's going to be really important for us to be together. When we're about to launch a new product and we're trying to make sure we thought of every angle, every aspect, every upside and downside of the new product, that's a good time for us to be together as well. So there are times where just it is critical for us to be in the same room in person. But there are other times, you know, 2 weeks ago was our Q1 earnings and I was preparing for earnings. I just need time on my own. And so me being here at my house in my basement, I was able to very effectively prepare for earnings. And there were times where I'd jump on a hangout or jump on a Zoom meeting with our CFO or our GC to ask a question. But being thoughtful about when is it appropriate to be with a group, when is it okay to be by yourself, I think has made Shopify a better run company. You know, for a long time, when we were in office, I'd be preparing for earnings or preparing for something that I just needed real focus time. And every 8 minutes I'd be disturbed or interrupted. And so I'd go find a little corner in the office. So I was in the office, but actually like I was getting very little value from being in the office. I think being thoughtful about when it's important to burst versus when do you want to just, you know, like Paul Graham's got this great essay called Managers versus Maker Schedules, where he talks about that, you know, manager schedules are kind of in 30-minute increments, but maker schedules need to be in 4-hour blocks. I really believe that there are certain tasks that I have where I really am on a maker's schedule where I need a 4-hour uninterrupted block. Whereas there's other days where I'm just back-to-back meetings and it's every 30 minutes, I'm sort of changing context and changing the way that the problem set in front of me. Being thoughtful about that really does matter.
You're a bit of a philosopher, I think.
I don't think so, but I think
I mean, you're very philosophical about what you've thought about these things.
Shopify is a deeply introspective company. And I think anyone that works at Shopify tries to also be deeply introspective. For Toby and I mean, Shopify is our baby and it's, we're so proud of it. But it also has, I think the qualification is if you want to lead a company like Shopify, you as a leader have to requalify for your job every single year. Otherwise you don't deserve I serve at the honor of Shopify and I feel very grateful for that. But the onus is on me, is on Harley to requalify every single year. And I think they call it the law of ecology, Carl. I maybe get this wrong. You can challenge me on this, but one of the laws of ecology is that the rate of growth of any particular species needs to be greater than or equal to the rate of growth of the environment. I think a lot about that in the confines of company building, that at Shopify, the company is growing so quickly, so fast, in so many new directions that in order for me to remain the president of the company, I need to grow equal than or greater to the speed of how fast Shopify is growing, which is massive. And that's not for everyone, but if you do care about that sort of personal growth and you have a growth mindset, which I think most people at Shopify do, there's no better environment. I mean, it's just the most exciting place to be.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about Shopify, how they compete, and experience Harley has had as a leader.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. So Toby is the CEO and you're the president, Harley. What is the difference between those two roles? What does one do and the other do?
I actually think the best teams, the teams that we admire most, that we look up to, it is less about the titles and it's more about the skill set. I think what happens at a lot of companies is that leaders are expected to become well-rounded leaders, well-rounded objects. You know, if you take a sharp stone and put it into a riverbed over a course of many thousands of years, it becomes a soft river stone, not sharp. You know, there's no sharp edges. It's kind of round everywhere. I think a lot of companies, they try to get their leaders to be well-rounded. We have not done that. Rather, we've sort of taken a very different approach, which is we actually like the idea of having very spiky objects. And so if you have a particular skill set in, you know, commercial or the business side of the company, or in, you know, storytelling, getting the company story out there, which is the two things that I focus most of my time on, my job is to make that pointy, that point even sharper. And my weaknesses, I need to be incredibly self-aware of, but I should hire for my weaknesses and not necessarily try to become well-rounded. And that's the approach that we've taken. You know, Toby is really one of the greatest technologists and product leaders, I believe, on the planet of any technology company. And so we as a team ensure that he can continue to sharpen that skill set, continue to get better at product and technology. And at the same time, my commitment to the company is I'm going to try to sharpen my sharp edge around the commercial side of the company, the business side, the story side, making sure that, you know, the whole world knows that Shopify exists and we become the entrepreneurship company. So that, I think, has been very valuable because, one, it allows us to have a very simple to understand division of labor and responsibilities. We know what everyone works on, and there's deep mutual respect around the executive table for everyone's skill set. But I couldn't do what Amy Shapiro does, our CFO, or I couldn't do what Jess Hertz does, our GC. Certainly couldn't do what Toby Lukid does, our CEO. They are world class at what they do, and we each sort of ensure that each other, we hold each other accountable to that particular skill set, but it is not necessarily to build well-rounded leaders, rather for all of us to become almost like the Avengers. Let's all be really, really good at this one thing. And then let's ensure that we have someone who's really good at that one thing across every aspect of the company that matters.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. This is a Montreal question, given that another company, Lightspeed, was founded here in Montreal. I should know this, but does Shopify compete with Lightspeed? How does Shopify see retail?
We know Lightspeed well. I know Dax well. He's a great, great Canadian entrepreneur, but we don't really compete with them. At least not in our version of it. I mean, our version of retail, the future retail, is retail everywhere. We think that the brands, the businesses that will be most successful in the future will not be selling across one channel. Maybe it's online store or offline channel in terms of physical store. They're just going to sell wherever their consumer wants to buy. And the reason that you see us announcing these partnerships with companies like TikTok or Snapchat or Snap or Meta or Instagram or Spotify or any of these channels for that matter is we believe that the future of commerce is going to happen in the venue and in the channel that is most convenient for the consumer. So, you know, I speak to, a mutual friend of ours, Larry Rosen, who's the CEO and chairman of Harry Rosen here in Canada all the time. And I actually think Harry Rosen is a great example of the future of retail. Now, you may say, well, Harry Rosen is not really selling on Instagram or TikTok. No, it's because Larry and his team have deep understanding of how the consumer of Harry Rosen wants to buy. And for the most part, it's in the physical store with a high touch white glove service. However, sometimes when you know what size shoe you are and you want to order a second pair of shoes, you can just go to harryrosen.com and purchase from the website as well. So they have a good understanding, a deep understanding of how their consumer wants to buy. But if you look at some of our, you know, my favorite brands, James Purse, my favorite black t-shirts, or Allbirds, my favorite sneakers, or Kith, my favorite, some of my favorite clothing companies, they also do it really well. Kith knows that so many of their, K-I-T-H, knows that so many of their consumers want to purchase directly on social media. That's where they're spending their time, sort of the modern day town square. But Allbirds knows that their physical stores, they have about, I think, 13 of them, which are powered by Shopify as well. Their physical stores are really showrooms for their online store. And so a lot of people go into the Allbirds physical stores, try on shoes to feel new fabrics, but the transaction often will happen in the online store as well. That to us is the future of retail. It's going to happen everywhere. So it's not to say that another company like Lightspeed or any other company is not doing it well, but they really focus on very particular verticals, very particular channels, like offline retail for golf clubs, for example, for memberships for golf courses. That's just not our business. What we're really trying to do is, one, we want to make it really easy for anyone to build a business from scratch. Not all will succeed, but the ones that do, we believe we can increase their likelihood of success by making all the things, all the challenges a little bit easier. And ultimately, what we want to see more of is, you know, Figs, for example, started on Shopify, is now a publicly traded company. They're completely changing the way hospital scrubs are sold in the world, or Allbirds, or Oatly. The companies that start with us at their mom's kitchen table that grow to be category leaders in a matter of a couple of years, we want to help create more of those. And you know, tying this back to my story, entrepreneurship has always been this tool for me, whether, you know, I want to be a DJ, no one would hire me, so I build my own DJ company, or I'm at McGill, my family has no money. I need to make some money. I use entrepreneurship as well. I think everyone that uses Shopify has a very different definition of success. It may be survival. It may be inspiration. It may be a passion project. It may just be commercializing their hobby. They make beautiful jewelry for their friends. Now they want to build a jewelry company. But I think this idea that more entrepreneurship should exist is a really good thing. And on the demand side of things, consumers have effectively started to vote with their wallets more than ever before to support these independent businesses and these independent companies in a way that we've not seen. I think that more consumers today would prefer to buy directly from the brand than go through an intermediary, assuming the experience is as good or if not better. And I think that is a very good thing.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. I'm doing a project with McKinsey. We're looking at how when startups grow to a certain size, they bring in a corporate type. For those people, it's about who you bring in, how you bring them in, how do you retain them. How do you honestly go about saying, I may not be up to the job anymore at this point, I'll step aside and let someone else be president of Shopify?
100%. I thought about that around the IPO. In fact, May 2015, almost 7 years ago to the day, we went public in the New York Stock Exchange. It was a dual listing, TSX and NYSE. And I thought a lot about that. I thought a lot about, can I be as valuable? Can I have the same impact I had in these next 5 years I had in the past 5 years? And I began to change up my mentors. I changed up my people that I sought advice from. I changed up my coaches. I brought in people that can help me with this next phase. And what I said to Toby and to the board for that matter was, I want to get really, really good at this. And if I can, then I believe I can be a really great leader for the next, 5 or 10 years, next decade. But if I can't, I will be the first to say I am not prepared for it. And that to me, in my sort of, Enneagram type three, type A personality trait, works really well for me, because I find it's incredibly motivating that I feel like I not only have to keep up, I have to grow faster than the company is growing. And I feel lucky that I can. And the second that I can't, I'll be the first to say it and say, you guys need to bring on someone else.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about whether Harley is an introvert or an extrovert and how he spends his free time.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. Harley, are you more of an introvert or an extrovert?
I am completely on the extrovert side. Some have referred to me as a power extrovert. I get all of my energy around being around other people. So I'm very much extrovert.
It's interesting because we talked about how you need hours by yourself to really work on an idea. So you sometimes act like an introvert.
I think there are some tasks that require my full attention, that require my entire capacity. And for those, I need the least amount of distraction as possible. But when I want to relax, or I want to unwind after, a tough day or a tough week or a tough month, it is with people. It's with people that I like and respect. And that's sort of how I find my, I enjoy taking a walk by myself and listening to a podcast or reading a book. But the way that I really relax is being around other people.
You started in Ottawa, but now you're managing globally. Do you manage differently in different parts of the world? Do you ask yourself if you should act differently managing Europe versus, let's say, managing in the States?
I think you have to have deep empathy for cultural values in every place. There's a certain comfort and a certain sort of the hierarchy of management in North America is very casual, but that's not the same case in other countries. And so other countries, there's far more formality. I remember going to Japan and beginning to understand that formality there relative to how it is in Canada and the US. And so I think as a leader, if you're going to lead a large global company, you have to have deep empathy and understand that. And by the way, the best way to understand it is not to read the book or to listen to the podcast. It's to go there and to talk to people on the ground there and say, how can I show up here in a way that is most appropriate, but also makes our team here most effective. But actually, I would say a bigger change is as we sort of moved from an in-person company to a digital by design company where we're all working from everywhere. One thing that we had to really scale up was our level of transparency. I think we were always a pretty transparent company. We became a lot more transparent to the organization. So for example, when we write a letter to the board every quarter, we share that letter with the whole company, unredacted, exact. We want the whole company to see how we're communicating to the board. Every Thursday, we have a town hall. Sometimes we go deep on one particular area of the business. Other times, it's just an AMA, a la Reddit, where it's ask me anything. It can be anonymous or you can put your name. It doesn't really matter. But it allows for us to understand sort of the pressure release valve of the company. In other cases, we have an internal podcast called Context, which will go deep on very specific subjects, and we'll record a 30-minute podcast, and it's available, you know, privately and securely to anyone that works at Shopify. But a lot of the topics that we think about are covered there. We've had to over-rotate on that transparency because we're not all in person, and that has been an important change, but something that we see a real impact from.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and today I'm speaking with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. What's the most important thing, Harley, people should know about you?
I think professionally, at least this is what I think. I'm not sure this is the most important thing to know about me, but there is no, you know, if you sort of trace my story and what I've done over my, you know, over my lifetime so far, I'm 38, so I'm still a long to go. I hope, but Shopify is truly the perfect company for me to be leading and me to be working at. It's interesting for someone to find a company whose mission reflects their own personal mission. And I know you speak and you advise a lot of students, Carl. And what I would say is, I think this idea of life's work is far more important than people give it credit for. I think a lot of people miss out on this opportunity to have this sort of work-life harmonious situation where the stuff that you wake up thinking about on Saturday morning when you're just, you know, maybe it's a sleep-in, unless you smoke as like I do, but you know, the things you're thinking about it laying in bed on a Saturday morning, those are the things you can do at work Monday morning if you set up your life in that way. And the fact that entrepreneurship has been such a huge part of my story, my family's story, even going back to my grandfather immigrating to Canada in 56. And now I get to help others access entrepreneurship. In many cases, people that otherwise would not be able to do so, makes me, I think, the luckiest, most fortunate person on the planet. And I think more people can find that. So that's sort of on the professional and on the personal side. I'm you know, somewhat of a new dad. My wife and I, we have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I am trying to get good at being a thoughtful, mindful, present father and husband. And I can tell you, I think entrepreneurship came a lot easier to me than fatherhood did or being a good partner to my wife. And so that's what I'm working on right now as much as possible.
What book are you reading right now?
I just picked this up. It's called The Cold Start Problem by Andrew Chen. Andrew's a venture capitalist at Andreessen Horowitz. And it's really about how to scale companies and leverage network effects. And it's really interesting because one of the first things that I did when I got to Shopify was help build the app ecosystem, the app program. And at the time, it was really more of, hey, let's just invite a bunch of third-party developers to build on top of the Shopify APIs. And today, I mean, the Shopify app ecosystem is one of the largest developer ecosystems on the planet, and a big part of our value proposition to any merchant. The fact that any merchant can find 100% product market fit on Shopify is very much because of that app ecosystem. And that's an example of you know, leveraging our size and our network effects to grow the business. But Andrew wrote this book and he sent it to me a couple weeks ago. And so I just started it this weekend, and it's really good so far.
What book are you going to start writing in a few years, if you ever write a book?
One thing that I've only started to do recently is talk about, is be a little bit more vulnerable in conversations like this, but just generally as I walk around, I always sort of thought that vulnerability demonstrates weakness. And more as I get older and learn how the world actually works, I realize that vulnerability can often signal strength. I've had anxiety for very long time since I was a kid. My anxiety generally is well managed. I'm able to direct it to sort of things to make me more productive. But I would love more business leaders and more leaders generally to talk about the things that they struggle with, whether it's anxiety or it's mental health or it's, I don't know, weight loss or it's their relationship to their parents or it's, you know, multi-generational trauma that many of us carry with us. I don't know. I don't want it to come off as sort of a how-to book, but I do think that we as leaders are made, we're all better off when we sort of take off the sort of the strong facade, the iron facade, and actually speak a little bit more with more vulnerability around how we're actually feeling. What I think it actually does more than anything else is it invites other people to come and approach you and share their best practices and share what worked with them. The moment I started talking about anxiety when the pandemic started publicly, saying I have anxiety, I manage it through meditation, mindfulness practice, through morning walks, through therapy, through a coach. All these other people started showing up at my door saying, hey, I have it too. Here's what I do. And I now have more tools in my sort of anxiety tool belt to use because I've invited more people in to have those conversations with me. So I'm not planning on writing a book, but if I did, it would probably be something around vulnerability while leading.
This is the CEO Series. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna, and our show producer, Youssef Sahoni. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.